Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive insights in how to live a longer and healthier life. Today, we begin with an article I read in Translational Neurodegeneration. Not your typical reading, but the good news is a phase two study resulted in improved cognition and other factors among Alzheimer's disease patients who consumed a combination of nutrients designed to support metabolic function. So that's good, right? Nutrients helping boost cognitive function in Alzheimer's and dementia? This is what it says, quote, from the peer review study. A growing body of evidence suggests that impaired brain energy metabolism and mitochondrial dysfunction in Alzheimer's disease may contribute to cognitive decline. Combining multiple compounds to both reduce oxidative injury and improve bioenergetics, in other words, to target multiple pathways simultaneously, has been proposed as a therapeutic strategy associated with more likely than not successful translational outcomes. Now, here's what they used, and you've heard me mention these many times. NAC, that stands for N-acetylcysteine. Also the amino acid L-serine, S-E-R-I-N-E. Then nicotinamide, riboside, N-I-C-O-T-I-N-A-M-I-D-E, which is an amino acid. Riboside, R-I-B-O-S-I-D-E. And finally, L, the letter L, carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E, tartrate, T-A-R-T-R-A-T-E. And these were people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. And either they received the active ingredients or a placebo. And this was given each day for 12 weeks. And among the participants who received the nutrients, Alzheimer's Disease Assessment Scale Cognitive Subscale scores significantly improved at the end of the treatment period compared with the beginning. So that's good news. Something simple, non-toxic, easy to get, can change the metabolics in the brain and help people with dementia and Alzheimer's specifically, which is a form of dementia. Now, another study, and this was published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. It was done at the University of North Carolina, and it talks about grapes and grapes that are dried into a powder. Well, some of you know about that, right? Grape powder. But here's the good news. Grape polyphenols, those are the nutrients in the grapes that you eat fresh or drink as grape juice or have as a powder, help counter negative effects of a high-fat diet. Now you're thinking, well, okay, Gary, I don't need a high-fat diet. I listen to your program. I try to follow the advice as much as I can, and I don't intentionally go out there and eat a lot of barbecued ribs and pork loins and the fried food that's got a lot of fat in it. Doesn't matter. It would still help you, and it would help you in ways that you wouldn't appreciate, because all of us have to measure our fat intake. So if you just had a scoop of grape polyphenols, it helps to offset some of the adverse consequences of consuming just too much fat. And a lot of people eat too much fat. Now, I eat fat. I eat some saturated fat. I eat saturated fat from some coconut oil. And then mono fatty acids from olive oil. And every morning, that goes my shake. And I try to measure how much my body needs. But I still have grapes, eating grapes fresh, drinking grape juice. Organic grape juice is terrific. A grape juice concentrate where they took out the water, so you're getting more of these polyphenols, or the best of all, the dried powder, which you're getting the most. So this just helps you. And this was done for 11 weeks, and it helped reduce subcutaneous fat deposits, mainly around the belly and the buttocks. And that's important, because the lower your body mass index, the less disease-related conditions you're going to have, such as obesity, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and a higher increased risk of heart attack and stroke. Right? Very good. So, something we can do. Now, from Beth Israel Medical Center comes another study, and this is about eating healthy can be just as good for seniors as taking 4,000 steps. Ah, so we already know that taking 10,000 steps a day, we should all do every day, 7 days a week. And probably in your normal walking, you're putting in maybe 2,000 steps. But sedentary people who sit too long at a desk, car, and a couch, they're not even getting that, and that's bad, because you need to keep your circulation moving. So 10,000 steps is ideal. But what if you don't always get those 2,000 steps? This is saying that, yes, 10,000 steps a day are great, but if you can't get there, how about a new study that finds that switching to a healthier diet is worth the same as taking thousands of steps? How many? 4,000 steps a day, if you're older, will compensate. So if you just have a really healthy diet and some juices in there, a really good plant-based diet, you just added what would be equivalent to 4,000 steps to your health that day. So what if you have a healthy diet and you're juicing and you're engaged in modified fasting, meaning you don't eat anything after dinner till breakfast, and you do 10,000 steps? Well, then you're in the highest percentage to live a longer life without disease and have full faculty. You're going to look better. Your skin will be tighter. Your hair, your muscles, all of that will be more youthful. So that's good. All right, and that's easy to do. All right, that's easy to do. Just switch to a healthy diet. And this study was a big study. 2,380 people were in this study. And they switched to a healthier diet. More, and here's what it says. Quote, a higher score indicates a superior quality diet. Emphasize the emphasis on vegetables, fruits, whole grains, nuts, legumes, fish, and healthy fats, meaning your hemp seed oil, flax seed oil, your olive oil, and also avocado oil. Avocado, an avocado a day keeps a heart attack away. And very limited, it says, on meat and alcohol, which means don't have any. And further analysis revealed 24 metabolites produced during digestion and reached into blood during exercise that shows healthy diet, healthy fitness. Poor diet, poor fitness. Also, from the University of Eastern Finland and Bristol University, Leicester University, Emory University, Cambridge University, and Innsbruck University, so all these universities, they did this study together. It was a 15-year follow-up study. That's a big deal. And they found this. Frequent sauna bathing reduces your risk of a stroke. All right? Frequent sauna reduces your risk of a stroke. Wow. By how much? Well, if you took 4 saunas a week, 61% less likely to suffer a stroke than those taking a sauna once a week. And this is the first prospective large-scale study on this topic, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. And by the way, I don't know that anyone in the audience may know him, but if you want to reach out to the family of the actor who had, would seem, had a stroke, and he's been in hospital and now at home, but not able to get back to everything normal, you might want to see if he is open to discussing whether or not he had vaccines, because there are doctors that he could be referred to, including in California, like Dr. Pierre Corey, who have holistic protocols that I've shared on this program over 10.5-hour webinar, longest webinar I ever did. And then I have a DVD of it in 4 hours, the best of it, that can help you if you've had stroke, heart attack, myocarditis, endocarditis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, if you're having premature it can throw you into premature neurological aging, meaning dementia. In fact, PhD, a physician in two specialties and a PhD in science, she developed long COVID. Mind you, all these people were pro-vaccine at the beginning. And then they started seeing the side effects. Well, she saw the side effects of the COVID in her, and it got so bad, and she runs a whole medical center, it got so bad she had to go to the hospital. And in the hospital, they told her they were going to give her remdesivir, the drug of choice, which no one should take. It's a deadly drug. And also intubate her. And most of the people who were initially intubated died because it's the wrong procedure. It's malpractice. You shouldn't do it. And that doesn't come from me. That comes from pulmonologists. Instead, they should have been hyperbaric oxygen. So at the last moment, she checked herself out of the hospital, had some people take her back to her clinic and started doing hyperbaric and trying all different types of methylene blue and intravenous vitamins, and slowly recovered. But what she said was most startling was that she aged in her brain almost 30 years. Now she said, I'm guessing she's in her 40s, and she said, it was just remarkable how fast my brain was aging, in effect dying, losing memory, short-term memory, just like the patients I treat, she said. And so then she mastered this protocol that helped rejuvenate her brain back to normal. So she's in my documentary on Hope and whatever's called Hope. You can look it up on my, I do so many talks, I don't even remember the name of some of them. I don't look at them once I'm done. I'm on to the next documentary. Well, I'm ready to premiere my newest documentary up in Woodstock. Two showings, one at 3, and that is strictly for the local wonderful work that is done by just one of the nicest human beings you'd ever meet. And she is getting my program aired every day, but she's really an anchor and a voice for a really progressive movement up in Woodstock, which is not one of the most progressive towns in America, I might say. It's kind of a contradiction. But all the funds, 100% of the funds go to her. Then at 6 o'clock, I'll be coming to the premiere, the only premiere we're going to have. And that will be on the new documentary, Manufacturing Madness. It is the most powerful, hard-hitting documentary I've ever produced. And I produced a lot of documentaries are hard-hitting. The War on Health, and as an example, and Death by Medicine. Now, this is hard-hitting, and I think you'll want to be there. But more importantly, join me for a demonstration. Again, I'm calling on people who are committed to seeing us push back against tyranny. Come to the demonstration in Kingston, which is just 15 minutes from Woodstock, a good vegan restaurant. And so if you want something to eat for dinner, you can go to the rally, and then go over and spend an afternoon in Woodstock. Not a lot of nice things to see in Woodstock, and but that you can have dinner in that vegan restaurant. And that's generally what I do. I've gone up there to premiere, wow. For Alicia, probably 20 films over the years. And I always eat this little restaurant around the corner. By the way, Dennis Kucinich is going to be at the rally. Dr. John Whitehead and his wife are going to be at the rally, one of the best constitutional attorneys in America. It's about take back our health, all right? Because we've lost our health at every level. Our body, ourselves, something I've believed in, something I have advocated with a hope. And again, I can only hope that people do their homework on whatever choice they're going to make and in their choice over their body. But now, it's no longer our body, ourselves. It's the government's body to do with what it wants. New York State, with this new law that they're trying to pass, wow, we need to stop this. And especially if you live in New York, you got to read the bill. I'm going to have the lawyer on who's fighting it. You have no rights with this bill. None. They can come into your home, even if you're not sick, and say you're a threat. and arrest you with no due process, no habeas corpus. They could lock you up and you can't get a lawyer. You can stay in there and rot. Yeah. Think it's not possible? It's here. It's here. It's happening. I don't tell you anything that doesn't happen, as you've seen over the years and decades. Everything I predicted has happened. So this is a rally. We need to all come together. Please take a bus, a nice bus ride up there, train ride up there, all right, or drive up. 1 o'clock is going to happen. Gerald Celante is going to be there. And we have a lot of speakers. 1 o'clock, Kingston, at the corner of downtown Kingston, where you got the four famous 1700 buildings. And that's where where it was last time. And we estimate 4,200 people from this audience over the whole day came up there. So I want to thank those 4,000 people for making that trip. Good for you. And this is even more important because I've got a whole lot of stuff to share with you you haven't heard before. Whole new talk on why we have to take back our health. So let's get together. Let's work together. It's we challenging the establishment. All right? So that's on Saturday, the 27th? I think it's Saturday. Yeah, Saturday, the 27th of this month. 2 weeks, I'll be there. All right? I hope you do. And then we go from my talk over and watch the premiere of the new film. It'll be the only live premiere because my schedule's packed beyond that. Okay? So make sure that you get word out that saunas are important for a lot of other reasons than just reducing risk of stroke. Great way of cleansing the body. And also to the actor, if anyone knows him, who's in the news all the time, having that stroke. All right? Because if that stroke was due to the side effects of the vaccine, there are protocols that can help with that. Because a lot of people are now finding side effects and the doctors don't know what caused it. Because it's all new science that we're finding. You'll hear more about this coming up. And finally today, fracking chemicals can harm developing immune systems. This is University of Rochester. So exposure to fracking chemicals in utero can harm the immune system and diminish the ability of female offspring to fend off diseases like multiple sclerosis. And fracking, also called hydrolytic fracking or unconventional oil and gas extraction, involves pumping millions of gallons of chemical-laden water deep underground to fracture rock and release the oil and gas. About 200 chemicals have been measured in wastewater and surface or groundwater in fracking dense regions, and several studies have reported higher rates of disease like acute lymphocytic leukemia, asthma attacks on residents in the area. And this was published in Toxicological Sciences from the University of Rochester Medical Center. Be against fracking. Don't allow it to happen. I led a whole campaign to stop fracking in my neighborhood, and because they wanted to come in and frack. In fact, a couple neighbors up over the hill where I'm at, I'm down in Texas. We're starting, in fact, I got to get outside because a whole group were out there of anti-aging people, and we're starting them on all their tests today, all their blood tests and all their gym tests. Now, it's next 15 hours of nothing but testing people. So we have a before and an after. I brought my film crew in. They're filming all this. And the results I'm going to share with all of you in 2 weeks. When the study won't be completed. It takes 90 days, but being on campus does. But they were trying to frack up and down this road, send you an innocent letter. Oh, we'll give you $1,500, you know, to be able to do some fracking. It's not a problem. Oh, yeah, it is a problem. So I led a campaign against that in the neighborhood. And thank goodness the neighbors don't want those chemicals in their water, in their body, nor should you. And finally, from Gashan University in South Korea, black pepper alleviates oxidative stress as a mitigating a neuroprotective agent against neurodegenerative diseases. Quite simply, we all know that neurodegenerative diseases are family disorders that cause progressive structural and functional deterioration of neurons. the cells in your brain. Among all the organs in the body, the brain is the one that is the most affected by the production and accumulation of these what are called ROSs. And various studies have shown that an increase in oxidative stress is a common pathophysiology for almost all of these. And but black pepper has a way of interfering and stopping this, and in effect is neuroprotective. All right? And that's the good news. So that's it for health and healing today. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going into something that is exclusive. You have not heard it, read it, or seen it anywhere in the United States. And it's about a conference that just ended. And wow, I started watching it, and as busy as I am, because I'm up at 4 in the morning and going till midnight when I'm doing these retreats and clinical studies, because there's so many things I have to take care of and lectures, etc. But I spent 3.5 hours late last night watching this. I was just blown away. So you're going to hear some stuff that is just, it's going to allow you, if you believe it, and that's your choice, to realize how we've all been played. Who is it? How did they do it? The person who actually did the homework, the scholarship, and on the screen, you won't see it, but on the screen at the European Union, and the whole room is filled, every seat's taken, you see this one person you're going to hear in a moment. And if you go to how you can watch this, go to prn.live and scroll down, you can just see him. But behind him on the screen, they're all seeing his documentation, hard documentation. And not his documentation, it's the patent office documentation, the scientific peer-reviewed studies documentation. Watch how he puts this puzzle together. You can say, good for you, wow, we didn't know this, or I don't believe you. That's your call. But I'm putting it up for you, this information that no media will touch. They didn't dare touch. You won't see this guy anywhere, because no one dare allow this man in, because this is one heavyweight intellect giant. And that's what you get on this show. All right? Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Not as something you have never heard. This is a presenter, a Dr. David Martin, an outstanding background and career, who is revealing for the first time absolute proof. And you can see the proof, well, you can't see it, but the people at the European Union Special Commission on COVID, the room is packed, every seat taken, and an outstanding group of people are together. Dr. David Martin and all of them will have slides. And these slides prove the government, according to Dr. Martin, that the government and the industry intended to create a biological weapon, that COVID was planned. That's in his words. And here's his proof of that. This will entertain an entirely new discussion, not just of why did they lie about everything, and why was misinformation and propaganda used to convince people to follow their dictates, but then the consequences of millions dead and tens of millions injured. And now he tells how this happened. Now to Dr. David Martin in a unique presentation, and one you have not seen. This is exclusive to the United States today.
Because this did not come in the last 3 years. This did not come in the last 5 or 6 years. This actually is an ongoing question that probably began here in Europe in the early stages of the mid-1900s. But certainly by 1913, 1914, this conversation started right here in Central Europe. The pandemic that we alleged to have happened in the last few years also did not happen overnight. In fact, the very specific pandemic using coronavirus began in a very different time. And we'll try to advance the slides here with one of these things. Oh, there we go. Most of you don't know that coronavirus as a model of a pathogen was isolated in 1965. Coronavirus was identified in 1965 as one of the first infectious replicatable viral models that could be used to modify a series of other experiences of the human condition. It was isolated once upon a time associated with the common cold. But what's particularly interesting about its isolation in 1965 was that it was immediately identified as a pathogen that could be used and modified for a whole host of reasons. And you heard me correctly, that was 1965. And by the way, these slides are public domain. You're welcome to look at every single reference. Every comment that I made is based on published material. So do make sure that you look at those references. But in 1966, the very first COV coronavirus model was used as a transatlantic biological experiment in human manipulation. And you heard the date, 1966. I hope you're getting the point of what I'm saying. This is not an overnight thing. This is actually something that's been long in the making. A year before I was born, we had the first transatlantic coronavirus data sharing experiment between the United States and the United Kingdom. And in 1967, the year I was born, we did the first human trials on inoculating people with modified coronavirus. Isn't that amazing? 56 years ago, the overnight success of a pathogen that's been 56 years in engineering. And I want that to chill with all of you. Where were we when we actually allowed, in violation of biological and chemical weapons treaties, where were we as a human civilization when we thought it was an acceptable thing to do to take a pathogen for the United States and infect the world with it? Where was that conversation? And what should have been that conversation in 1967? That conversation wasn't had. Ironically, the common cold was turned into a chimera in the 1970s. And in 1975, 1976, and 1977, we started figuring out how to modify coronavirus by putting it into different animals, pigs and dogs. And not surprisingly, by the time we got to 1990, we found out that coronavirus as an infectious agent was an industrial problem for two primary industries, the industries of dogs and pigs. Dog breeders and pigs found that coronavirus created gastrointestinal problems, and that became the basis for Pfizer's first spike protein vaccine patent filed, are you ready for this, in 1990. Did you hear what I just said? 1990. Operation Warp Speed? I'm sorry. Where's the warp and the speed? Pfizer, 1990, the very first spike protein vaccine for coronavirus. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that we were told that, well, the spike protein is a new thing. We just found out that that's the problem. No. As a matter of fact, we didn't just find out it was not just now the problem. We found that out in 1990 and filed the first patents on vaccines in 1990 for the spike protein of coronavirus. And who would have thought? Pfizer. Clearly the innocent organization that does nothing but promote human health. Clearly Pfizer. The organization that has not bought the votes in this chamber and in every chamber of every government around the world. Not that Pfizer. Certainly, they wouldn't have had anything to do with this. But oh yes, they did. And in 1990, they found out that there was a problem with vaccines. They didn't work. You know why they didn't work? It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus from 1990 until 2018, every single publication concluded that coronavirus escapes the vaccine impulse. because it modifies and mutates too quickly for vaccines to be effective. And since 1990 to 2018, that is the published science, ladies and gentlemen. That's following the science. Following the science is their own indictment of their own programs that said it doesn't work. And there are thousands of publications to that effect, not a few hundred, and not paid for by pharmaceutical companies. These are publications that are independent scientific research that shows unequivocally, including efforts of the chimera modifications made by Ralph Baric in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. All of them show vaccines do not work on coronavirus. That's the science. And that science has never been disputed. But then we had an interesting development in 2002. And this date is most important. Because in 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. Listen to those words, infectious replication defective. What does that phrase actually mean? For those of you not familiar with language, let me unpack it for you. Infectious replication defective means a weapon. It means something meant to target an individual, but not have collateral damage to other individuals. That's what infectious replication defective means. And that patent was filed in 2002 on work funded by NIAID's Anthony Fauci from 1999 to 2002. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. Dave, are you suggesting that SARS 1.0 wasn't from a wet market in Wuhan? Are you suggesting it might have come from a laboratory in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill? No, I'm not suggesting it. I'm telling you that's the facts. We engineered SARS. SARS is not a naturally occurring phenomenon. The naturally occurring phenomenon is called the common cold. It's called influenza-like illness. It's called gastroenteritis. That's the naturally occurring coronavirus. SARS is the research developed by humans weaponizing a life system model to actually attack human beings. And they patented it in 2002. And in 2003, giant surprise, the CDC filed the patent on coronavirus isolated from humans in violation, once again, of biological and chemical weapons treaties and laws that we have in the United States. And I'm very, very precise on this. The United States likes to talk about its rights and everything else and the rule of law and all the nonsense that we like to talk about. But we don't ratify treaties about, I don't know, defending humans. We conspicuously avoid that. We actually have a great track record of advocating for human rights and then denying them when it comes to actually being part of the international community, which is a slightly problematic thing. But let's get something very clear. When the CDC in April of 2003 filed the patent on SARS coronavirus isolated from humans, what did they do? They downloaded a sequence from China and filed a patent on it in the United States. Any of you familiar with biological and chemical weapons treaties knows that's a violation. That's a crime. That's not an innocent oops. That's a crime. And the United States Patent Office went as far as to reject that patent application on two occasions until the CDC decided to bribe the Patent Office to override the patent examiner to ultimately issue the patent in 2007 on SARS coronavirus. But let's not let that get away from us, because it turns out that the RT-PCR, which was the test that we allegedly were going to use to identify the risks associated with coronavirus, was actually identified as a bioterrorism threat by me in the European Union-sponsored events in 2002 and 2003, 20 years ago. That happened here in Brussels and across Europe. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology. described as such. That's not my terminology that I'm applying to it. It was actually described as a bioweapons platform technology in 2005. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification from 2005 forward. I don't know if that sounds like public health to you. Does it? Biological warfare enabling technology. That feels like not public health. That feels like not medicine. That feels like a weapon designed to take out humanity. That's what it feels like. And it feels like that because that's exactly what it is. We have been lured into believing that EcoHealth Alliance and DARPA and all of these organizations are what we should be pointing to. But we've been specifically requested to ignore the facts that over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci in a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. And it's been going on since 2005. Our gain-of-function moratorium, the moratorium that was supposed to freeze any efforts to do gain-of-function research. Conveniently, in the fall of 2014, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received a letter from NIAID saying that while the gain-of-function moratorium on coronavirus in vivo should be suspended, because their grants had already been funded, they received an exemption. Did you hear what I just said? A biological weapons lab facility at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received an exemption from the gain-of-function moratorium so that by 2016, we could publish the journal article that said, SARS coronavirus is poised for human emergence in 2016. And what, you might ask, Dave, was the coronavirus poised for human emergence? It was WIV1, Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1, poised for human emergence in 2016 at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, such that by the time we get to 2017 and 2018, the following phrase entered into common parlance among the community. There is going to be an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen. The operative word, obviously, in that phrase, the word release. Does that sound like leak? Does that sound like a bat and a pangolin went into a bar in the Wuhan market and hung out and had sex, and lo and behold, we got SARS-CoV-2? No. Accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen was the terminology used, and four times in April of 2019, 7 months before the allegation of patient number one, four patent applications of Moderna were modified to include the term accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen as the justification for making a vaccine for a thing that did not exist. Keep going. If you have not done so, please make sure that you make reference in every investigation to the premeditation nature of this, because it was in September of 2019 that the world was informed that we were going to have an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen so that by September 2020, there would be a worldwide acceptance of a universal vaccine template. That's their words right in front of you on the screen. The intent was to get the world to accept a universal vaccine template, and the intent was to use coronavirus to get there. And the last slide. This isn't advancing, so if I could have somebody advance. Let's read this, because we have to read this into the record everywhere I go. Until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at the emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, he said, we need to increase the public understanding for the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. Sounds like public health? Sounds like the best of humanity? No, ladies and gentlemen, this was premeditated domestic terrorism stated at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2015, published in front of them. This is an act of biological and chemical warfare perpetrated on the human race, and it was admitted to in writing that this was a financial heist and a financial fraud. Investors will follow if they see profit at the end of the process. Let me conclude by making five very brief recommendations. The last slide. Nature was hijacked. This whole story started in 1965 when we decided to hijack a natural model and decide to start manipulating it. Science was hijacked when the only questions that could be asked were questions authorized under the patent protection of the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, and their equivalent organizations around the world. We didn't have independent science. We had hijacked science. And unfortunately, there was no moral oversight in violation of all of the codes that we stand for. There was no independent, financially disinterested, independent review board ever impaneled around coronavirus. Not once. Not once. Not since 1965. We do not have a single independent IRB ever impaneled around coronavirus. So morality was suspended for medical countermeasures. And ultimately, humanity was lost because we decided to allow it to happen. Our job today is to say no more gain-of-function research, period. No more weaponization of nature, period. And most importantly, no more corporate patronage of science for their own self-interest, unless they assume 100% product liability for every injury and every death that they maintain. Thank you very much.
Mind you, Dr. David Martin is not some crackpot. He has a storied career. And he says, look at the evidence. I have it. I present it to you. That's important. All right? So, we're going to take a break and come right back. We have a lot to share. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Well, you've heard something very important, and it should cause us to stop and reflect and say, how did this happen? Is it possible that what Dr. Martin was saying is accurate? He has presented his evidence. He has a long and distinguished career and in academia and also in knowing patents. No one knows more about patents and proprietary interests than he. So if he's right, it means everything you were told about COVID and we didn't know and what's this new virus and, oh my goodness, what can we do about it? And we've got to quarantine you and here's the test. Everything was wrong. Is it possible that that many thousands of scientists working in government and industry, that many people in the media with all the resources they have, they could all be wrong? Well, yes, they have been wrong before on many occasions, like Vioxx killing tens of thousands of Americans, and they said they didn't know. It turns out they did know, and we had the proof, but nobody went to jail. Should anybody be punished this time around, or should we just say, as we have historically about everything, lessons learned, let's go forward? All right. Atlantic Monthly even floated an article about this and said, let's just give an amnesty. But how can you give amnesty when no one's acknowledged they've committed a crime? That's the world we live in, and it's not good. So that's why every day this week I'm going to play clips from programs that show us how to engage in critical thinking. Your turn to talk back to this issue, to tell us your points of view. Just give us a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And let me just give you a few headlines why this is important. This is just this morning. This is from Kieran Williams, news reporter. This is in Great Britain. Quote, Brits are dying in their tens of thousands, and we don't really have any idea why. All right, we do. It's the vaccines. You don't because you're not looking for it. What you don't look for, you won't find. So now it's official. They're acknowledging all these deaths, which before they denied. In America, they still deny it. They will never have on anyone who's a victim who's survived or a family of people who died. And because if they acknowledged all the people who are really sick or injured, you're dealing then in millions and millions and millions of Americans who either died or are permanently disabled, and they can't have that. So as long as the media stays firm and acts under the total control of special interest groups, that information will never get out. But now in Britain, other countries, is getting out. So now their house of cards is collapsing, and the lawsuits will follow. Now, also today, and that was David Martin, Dr. David Martin, but I have coming up Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Jason Kristoff, Dr. Brian Breldel, Professor Arne Burkhardt, Dr. Ryan Cole, Dr. Merrill Nass, Dr. Robert Malone. And I'm going to be presenting this as a classroom on the air next week and the week after, so you'll hear all of this. All right? Also, Klaus Martin is saying now, according to Elizabeth Nicholson, that, quote, "We are taking everything you have." But here's a lovely narrative to rock you to sleep. Quote, Klaus Martin, he of the weird weird costume Nazi overlord accent, who squats astride Davos, the man from which emits the stench of world government, has graced his former serfs, us, with yet another of his torturous screeds, this one called the Great Narrative for a Better Future, in which he argues for empathy. So let's all pause and think about how Klaus Schwab wants to make it a better world for all of us. And then it goes through all the stuff along with Trudeau and Boris Yeltsin and Macron. Oh, and by the way, people cheered when Elon Musk said that he was going to step away from running Twitter every day and hire someone who's really independent. No, we looked into this person's background. She is a top person on the World Economic Forum. She's one of their new world leaders. She is as orthodox establishment as you get. So Elon Musk either didn't do his homework or certainly did do his homework, but is not as empathetic to the plight of the human person individuals as he is with the neoliberal agenda. So, yeah, Klaus, you do realize that 141 million Americans have been forced into extreme poverty by energy prices. And who was behind that energy price push? You. All of your agents were there to say, sanctions, sanctions, sanctions. It all backfired. None of it worked. And now everything's costing more. And was that just intent? We'll find out. But you should know who the enemy is, and it's Klaus Schwab and all the people at Davos. In fact, this is from Moomover, Alabama. Quote, they are propagandizing for Nazis, but won't tell you that. At the start of the recent war in Ukraine, Western media changed their mind about Ukrainian Nazi groups. What they had condemned over years in their headlines and pieces was first whitewashed, and then, when that was not enough, simply eliminated from the context. As example, I pointed to the changing headlines and descriptions of the fascist Azov militia in the pages of the New York Times. March 15th, 2019, quote, on his flak jacket was a symbol commonly used by the Azov Battalion, a Ukrainian neo-Nazi paramilitary organization. Okay. February 11th, 2020, quote, New York Times, defenders of the Ukrainian Azov Battalion, which the FBI calls a paramilitary unit, notorious for its, quote, association with neo-Nazi ideology, accuse us of being part of the Kremlin campaign to demonize the group. March 17, 2022, Facebook last week said it was making an exception to its anti-extremism policies to allow praise for Ukrainian far-right Azov Battalion military unit, strictly in the context of defending Ukraine or in their role as part of the Ukrainian National Guard. April 29, 2022, these scenes are from videos shared online in recent days by the Azov Regiment, a unit of the Ukrainian military, which says they were taken in the Maz-like bunkers beneath the sprawling Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol, Ukraine. As I had written previously, quote, what was once, quote, a Ukrainian neo-Nazi paramilitary organization, which even the FBI is notorious for its association with neo-Nazi ideology, was first relabeled as merely far-right before it became a normal, quote, unit in Ukrainian military. In yesterday's report about this, some dubious Ukrainian military success, the Times has taken the next step, which is to avoid mentioning Azov altogether. This is propaganda. So they took a neo-Nazi group that had its history of killing Jews, hundreds of thousands of Jews, in World War II, and now it is ran, it's running roughshod, and it even has kill lists. Guess who they just put on their kill list? Randy Cretico. Yeah, Randy made the kill list. This isn't some hypothetical list. This is a real list where people on the list have been killed, assassinated, all over the world. And guess who supports all this? The United States government. Not officially, of course. They wouldn't say that. But who gives the funding to the Azov Battalion? You know, the neo-Nazis. The Defense Department. The government. Just to let you know, unless you're willing to see propaganda for what it is, you become a victim of it. Let's just see if we have any calls coming in. 888-874-4888. If not, in a minute or 2 minutes from now, we'll break for BAI to do its news. We're going to carry on to the top of the hour because I've got some other stuff to share with you. On tomorrow's program, I'm doing a whole clip on how everything you're shown in America today is propaganda. And it's propaganda to get you to believe in something, to buy something that you don't need, changing a want into a need, and making it seem completely natural and of your own choice. It's not. Remember, propaganda, the big lie, over and over again, from every source, led a lot of people to believe that, wow, this could kill everyone, my children, myself, we got to get the vaccine, and we got to quarantine, and we can't be around our family when they're in intensive care, etc. All of that was a lie. So you're going to continue to believe them? Well, if you do, just understand there's not going to be a good outcome. Also, Google has unveiled plans to demolish journalism, the whole industry of journalism, using artificial intelligence. This is from the Futurism. This could change everything. Quote, remember back in 2018 when Google removed Don't Be Evil from its code of conduct? It's been living up to that removal lately. At its annual meeting in San Francisco this week, the search giant finally lifted the lid on its vision of an artificial intelligence integrated search, and that vision apparently involves cutting digital publishers off at the knees. Google's new artificial intelligence-powered search interface, dubbed Search Generative Experience, or SGE for short, involves a feature called AI Snapshot. Basically, it's an enormous top-of-the-page summarization feature. Ask, for example, why is sourdough bread still so popular? One of the examples that Google used in their presentation, and before you get to the blue links that we're all familiar with, Google will provide you with a large language model, LLM, generated summary, or we guess snapshot. Google's normal search results load almost immediately. And above all, a rectangular orange section pulses and glows and shows the phrase generative artificial intelligence is experimental. A few seconds later, the glowing is replaced by an artificial generated summary, a few paragraphs detailing how good sourdough tastes, the upside of its prebiotic abilities, and more. So just understand, they can eliminate literally all journalism. No more Chris Hedges, no more Abby Martin, no more Gary Knoll, no more of those of us who spent our lifetime going against the machine and telling the truth. They will control all journalism and a lot more. But now they're acknowledging it. Remember I said they never tell you what's coming until it's here. And it's here. So for those of you who didn't think it was a big deal, the government will intervene. But this is a government they control. Mind you, when you control artificial intelligence and you control the national security state, then you know everyone's phone calls, you know their phone records, you know their conversations, and everybody shuts up.
Gary, we have a call.
When they talk. And let's see whose name I'm going to be speaking with here in a moment.
It's Jeremiah.
Jeremiah from Harlem. Hi, Jeremiah, your turn.
Pleasure to talk with you, Gary. That was some really powerful stuff you were presenting there with Professor David Martin. And I would really like to see Professor Martin in some kind of summit with Sasha Lachipova. I would really be curious to see what overlap there is in their research. But, I'm just calling in basically to lament that the people's movement that I was a part of, I was a member of the Student Liberation Action Movement of Hunter College. That's where I had my formative years of activism, and we did a lot of actions that I'm proud of, standing up for political prisoners, fighting against, if you can fight against war, but, standing up against war policies of all different kinds, standing up against police brutality. But I'm very sad to say that the people's movement that I was a part of was truly destroyed by COVID. Jimmy Dore had a great piece recently that I suggest everyone listen to. He interviewed Professor Matthias Desmet, who talks about this mass formation psychosis kind of theory that he's laid out that seems to be quite effective in describing a lot of what we've experienced in the past couple years. But I mean, it's quite astonishing. I mean, it's kind of like a heavyweight boxing match, and we got KO'd, and finding myself, staring at the lights coming to, trying to figure out what the heck happened. But people who used to stand up against injustice not only failed to stand up against injustice, they became the foot soldiers of this with their sort of activist tendency and background. They stepped up and became the attack dogs for the neoliberals that they've sort of merged with through their lesser of two evils voting strategy, which has ultimately taken us to this point, which is the ushering in of the biosecurity state. So, I don't mean to sound pessimistic. There are new formations being made. There are affinity groups being formed. There are people reaching across the sort of superficial left-right divide. But as far as the people's movement that I used to be a part of, I'm sad to say it's not a statement of pessimism. It's a statement of realism to say that no longer exists. We were KO'd. We were wiped out. Ball game over with this COVID-19 narrative and everything that went along with it.
That was their intent. That's what David Martin is now showing, proving beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this was planned and orchestrated, and now they're planning the next step. And that's why they want digital currency, that's why they want digital ID, that's why they want to control us. So people got used to the fact that wear your mask and wear your mask because it will protect you. But why, when I sit down in a restaurant, take my mask off, and all the people in the restaurant have their mask on, the waiters and chefs, you mean the virus won't attack me when I'm eating? The lack of common sense, let alone lack of science. Now we're showing that the science they didn't have to begin with, but they controlled the scientific community. So those scientists who knew that they were lying wouldn't speak up. Now they're finding their voice. And that's why this big conference just completed, and we got all the film. I was up last night for 3.5 hours just editing all these people in a long, long day so we could have those clips, 2 hours worth of clips. Tomorrow I'm playing you Dr. Cole, who was there also, and he really let it rip. You'll hear that tomorrow. But also you're going to hear something good, David. We will lose almost every battle in the next 3 years. We will lose them. But we won't lose the war. And in some respects, not in an optimistic way, but you hope that how excessive they are in their tyranny and the greed, that they actually succeed, because in success, it'll awaken people when they finally have no rights, when they're nothing more than chattel. And that's coming so fast from so many different directions. It's like 10,000 great white sharks, and suddenly there's someone with a nosebleed, and the American public is the nosebleed. They are taking those survivors. You saw that when the historical liberal community and the Democrat faction of the liberal community sided with censoring free speech, promoting critical race theory, promoting identity politics, promoting wokeism as a new fetish. Now, the vast majority of people don't support that. But here's the interesting part. Robert Kennedy has received last night, hopefully he'll read it today. If not, Dennis Kucinich, his campaign manager, will receive it, because I know Dennis. I know Robert also, but he's very busy, and Mary Holland. They all got it. And a new platform for taking back America and taking back our health and taking back our rights. These are my principles. I hope that they look at it and use them. But if they don't, at least all of you can. So I'm going to be sharing this tomorrow with you. In effect, a new Bill of Rights. I've written it. I've shared it with these people. And my hope is, for example, that they use it. My very first point on there is create an immediate pardon for all whistleblowers. You're talking about 40 or 50 whistleblowers, all who were on the right side of truth and who were punished for it. And that sets a new precedent. So, and there's about 40 other points after that. So we have to create new programs. We have to create a whole new feminist movement, because that, as you heard Naomi Wolf say, and she led the feminist movement for the last 15 years, an important part of the last 35 years, but she was sharing it at the beginning with other formidable minds, Betty Friedan and Gloria Simon and Dodson and et cetera. But now she was kind of almost alone out there as a public figure, a voice, and she said, I want nothing more to do with the feminist movement. It's betrayed women. It's sold out. And why didn't you see anyone defending pregnant women for not wanting to get the vaccine? And those who didn't are on the right side of science and health. But those who said, yes, you know, we're for women. Get your vaccine. It's your right. We demand it. And now you have all these dead women and dead babies. Because, so give up on all the old groups. Start new groups. Start fresh. Start from scratch. Because if I'm right, the amount of corruption that they've engaged in will be exposed shortly, and then they'll collapse. Even the most die-hard liberals will have to say, this is just crazy. I cannot support this anymore, or otherwise. I've gone to an extreme sense of decadency and avarice in my own life. I can't tolerate this. That's what we're waiting on, and you'll hear more all this week, every day. Thank you very much, Jeremiah, for your call. We're out of time, everyone. Well, here's a voice you're used to. Eutrice Lead, right now.